Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for, I don't even know what date it is.
December it's Wednesday. 13th.
December 13th, 2006. Hi, everybody. We are here. Did I say who I am? This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Games for Windows Magazine. And I'm here with three of the four other editors of the magazine. And they are
Ryan Scott,
Sean Elliott,
Sean Malloy.
And Darren Gladstone is away on assignment for our March cover story. He's in New York City right now.
New York City?
Yeah, New York City. Probably drunk right now. It's 10 a.m., 11 a.m. in the morning. And knowing Darren, he's drunk. So, here we are. We're shipping a magazine this week today, which is why we're late once again. And I don't know about you guys, but have we been on time with this podcast
in about a month? We been on time?
Maybe we need to change the time we do this.
But it's apropos for PC gaming, you know, that's done when it's done thing.
That's right.
I mean, it's not. Yeah,
this is like we need to adopt that mantra.
Yeah.
Right. We'll podcast when we podcast.
Anytime there's a thread on the forums that says, "Where's your podcast?"
Right, because if we came out on Monday when we're supposed to, then we'd have to have a patch for the podcast.
The pro, you know, the cons are obviously it's not there when you're told it's there. The pros are that when it does come out and surprises you, it's like, oh, cool. Like, you know,
right.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but we are sorry. Did we even try Monday?
We did, but it just wasn't the shipping stuff. Just
and then yesterday I had the dentist.
Blame Jeff's teeth.
Yeah, blame my teeth on the lack of a podcast this week. So here we are anyway, Darren-less, but still ready to talk. And let's get the usual what you're playing out of the way, and then we'll get onto some more interesting and important things, like my teeth. Ryan, what are you playing? Are you playing?
There's a couple games that I've been playing lately. One, I can't say too much about yet because it's not out until January. But
great,
let's
start off with a tease.
It's the next episode of Sam & Max.
Ooh.
It's about like the previous episode.
Any funnier, any less funny?
It's
puzzles better, worse, the same?
It's similar in terms of humor. You see like sort of a lot of the same locations in this game just because, you know, it's episodic. They're doing one a month, so.
Could you play like just the second one? I mean, are they standalone in a way?
You could.
Would you want to? I mean, is there any like on last week's episode kind of thing or last month's episode, you know? Like, do you have to buy into the whole thing? That's what I'm asking. Or could I just start with episode two and know what was going on?
I think you could probably just start with episode two. Yeah.
Because I wonder if...
Well, because you have to get it on GameTap, you don't have to, like, buy the previous one or anything. So you might as well. I can't imagine anyone, like, going, I'm going to skip episode one. I don't really care.
Right.
If that's the model they have. It's not like you have to go buy the old one.
Right. I just haven't even physically seen the model. So, I mean, I wonder if it looks like an iTunes thing where, like, every episode of a TV show is listed and you could just get the ones you want, you know?
It's like as far as the structure of the game and getting into it, you know, it's like a standalone episode of a TV show. You don't have to have seen the previous episode.
Okay. I wouldn't have had to solve any particular puzzles from episode one to play episode two. They're just standalone games in a way.
Right. So if you're still on the fence about Sam & Max, you can jump in with this one.
So the one thing they should probably get props for is, like, they're the one episodic game that's actually now had a second episode.
Right.
Like, in a timely manner.
What's Half-Life 2?
Congratulations.
Half-Life 2, Episode 2.
Yeah, when's that supposed to come out now?
Late summer of 2007.
And Sin, Episode 2, right?
Is likely not happening now.
Oh.
So, you know, I mean,
I mean, on that count, it's a lot of people from the dev team have left.
A Ritual?
Yeah, they've gone elsewhere. They've now worked for other people. Some of the key people, the lead designer, I mean, one of the lead programmers.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
And that seems like a real-world thing that's going to be constantly a problem with any episodic game. I mean, how could you possibly, you know, ensure to fans or gamers that there's going to be future episodes if at any given point the team might dissolve?
And there's still the jury's out on why that's happening. I mean, I've personally been trying to contact the head there, Thomas Stane. And I haven't been able to get too much information, but I mean, what it seems to imply, I mean, obviously, is that Sin Episode 1 didn't do well.
Yeah.
And it's the equivalent of, you know, when you got a pilot and it comes out and people don't respond well to it. And that's bad. Yeah, I mean, I guess it works good. It means it works well in that you don't spend, you know, 3 years working on something that's not going to, you know, pay back.
Right.
But at the same time, when you get those cases where they're, you know, we all know those famous great pilots or the great season ones or there was whatever, there's like four episodes and then it's fantastic, but not enough people get it. And then it's just enough to give you a taste and then it's gone because not enough people got it. But I mean, yeah, it's so far there's no guarantees with episodic stuff.
Yeah. The Half-Life episode 2 one, though, is a little more...
Well, the guarantee. Yeah, I guess take that back. Let me go right back. Your guarantees when your episodes are Half-Life. But that's what we were saying from the beginning. You can't really judge the strength of episodic, you know, content as a model based on Half-Life because it has a built-in you know safety net.
Right, freaking Half-Life.
Right, and I mean, Valve is so slow. Mm-hmm. I mean, the odds are when Episode 2 finally comes out, right, it's probably going to be great.
Right, and you know, and in addition, it's coming with, and it, to further complicate things, it's got Team Fortress 2 and Portal packaged with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who's to say? Because, I mean, I would buy, if it doesn't even matter what it came with. It has Team Fortress 2, I'll pay whatever. Right. And if it's like $59, I'll pay that for Team Fortress 2 and whatever else comes with it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's so many ways is that you just can't look at that, at how I can see.
But remember our cover line for when we did the Half-Life Episode 1 article?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, a new Half-Life every 3 months?
Right.
Yes. No.
True.
So, I mean, and so that, you know... I mean, maybe we got to call it something different than episodic content or something. Really, they're like expansions at this point or something.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, they really are, you know. And then, at that rate, they're expansions.
Yeah, and then our expectations are different, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to tell us that we're going to get episodes.
Right.
Then I would expect something more like what we actually are seeing with Sam and Max, right? Because what was the time span between 1 and 2?
Episode 1 came out in November, and now Episode 2 is coming out in early January.
See, that's so cool.
That's really on track, yeah.
That's like as often as we get Lost episodes these days. So, not that I like
that. And so far, according to the schedule that's on their website, I mean, they're planning on hitting a monthly release. Mm-hmm.
Did we ever hear back from them about our review of that game? Because, you know, we didn't fall all over
Should
ourselves.
We have?
No, I don't think they had anything to say.
Mm-hmm. I'm disgusted.
Might have been just what they expected.
Yeah.
They haven't said anything.
I still haven't played it yet,
mean.
Which stuns me that I haven't.
I'm saving them up.
It's good.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Aha.
So really? What?
No, I don't know.
I should try. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's exactly what I need to be able to hop in and hop out, at least in terms of a single-player game.
And it's pretty
But
well
I just really don't know. I missed the whole adventure game boat, and I see Ryan playing, and there's like an apothecary shop, and there are different medicines on the shelf, and all I see him is pointing at different ones, and I look 20 minutes later, and he's still doing it. I'm like, at least with whatever.
Obscure graphic
at least
adventure
with
puzzles.
Bejeweled, them shits are blowing up, making pretty colors.
That used to be my favorite genre. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, good adventure games can just be great, you know, adventures in logic, and you know they're good mind, you know.
Yeah, they're clearly
they're
good for your mind,
for your intelligence.
You obviously haven't played one in a while.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I haven't played one in so long. I'm stupider. But God, even the old text adventures were awesome. Now I'm really dating myself, but my favorites were the LucasArts ones. I think Ryan, you're with me on that. The Monkey Islands.
Totally.
Yeah.
I am also with you on that.
Yeah. But it's been a long, long time.
I haven't played a graphic adventure in I don't even know how long. But that used to be like the exclusive domain of my PC playing almost.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's lament the death of the graphic adventure
like
yet one more time.
Yeah. Ryan's also playing an episodic game that's not officially out as an episodic game. It's Splinter Cell. Just in that it comes out every year, which basically means it comes out...
True. Well, it comes out more than the Half-Life
Greater
episodes.
Frequency than the Half-Life episodes.
And how is it, Brian?
Well, it's feels like a freaking game that comes out every year. It's sort of, you know, these Tom Clancy games are sort of Ubisoft's Madden.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because, like, I liked the first Splinter Cell, but they actually come out so often now that I'm, like, too behind. Like, I have them all on my shelf ready to play because I know I like the series.
You don't need to be. You're not behind because they're not serial stories in any real sense. I mean, you're not. I mean, you're not going to be have an impoverished experience because you missed out on, you know, whatever the events in Chaos Theory were or Pandora Tomorrow or whatever the case may be, however you jump around.
Yeah, you'll pick it up pretty fast.
I can't even distinguish between the different subtitle names now.
Yeah.
I don't know which one is which. Really? What's the latest one called?
Chaos Tomorrow?
No. Double Agent's the latest.
Okay, so what does this one do that the others didn't, if anything?
The big mechanic that they're trying to sell you on with this one is this trust meter that you've got.
Yeah.
Because you're playing Special Agent Sam Fisher, one-man army type guy. And
you still got the green thing on your head, the green glowy thing.
At certain points.
Awesome.
This time you're undercover though. You're infiltrating a terrorist cell.
Okay.
And at
John
Brown's army. And at certain points in the game, you're asked to make these moral decisions. Like early on, there's a prisoner.
Oh, like an adventure game.
Well, there's no real consequence to them though.
Well, how does it work? Like, I mean, how does it work?
Break it down for us.
You have this trust meter that kind of fluctuates between
kind of like
how
in
much,
real life.
Kind of like in real
is
life.
It like angels.
Right now, I trust you very little.
I trust the story is going to be worth podcasting about.
It
dipping
fluctuates
rapidly.
This trust meter fluctuates.
All right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So you have this trust meter that fluctuates between these dudes back home with the NSA and this terrorist cell that you're infiltrating. And depending on whether you do things that they want you to do, like, you know, do you kill the prisoner to show your loyalty or do you not kill the prisoner? It kind of waxes and wanes between those two sides. And basically it amounts to whether you unlock a bonus level at the end. Like,
well, what happens if it dips all the way into the, like, untrust? Game over.
Like John Brown's army, say for example, you refuse to do their evil bidding to the extent that you're allowed the choice. They're still gonna keep working with you, right?
Right.
I mean they have to. You all of a sudden don't get kicked out on the street and you're like, hey, I gotta go, this mission's compromised. Right. Now we gotta come in here with the Rainbow Six team and just like straight up shoot them, you know. I mean,
well, there's things that you can do to where that they'll get mad and start attacking you and realize like, hey, he's not one of us. But, you know, at that point, you're just probably going to reload your last save anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not really all as big as the back of the box would have you think.
Is it fun, though? I mean, is that mechanic adding something worth
doing? Not really.
In what I've played, it hadn't. But, I mean, at the same time, the game's worth playing to me. And I think I like it more than you, Ryan, because I'm able to see, even though I have played every single one in the series, I'm able to imagine that I hadn't. So, for example, if I artificially imposed, you know, like a 2-year break on myself or whatever, or if this is my first time with the game, it's still a very well put together, you know, product.
That's what I've liked about the two I have.
Yeah, compare it to, you know, a lot of the other stuff out there, and it just completely destroys, you know, the vast majority of other, you know, speed up games.
What I remember is just like the just really, really awesome level design. You know, just the opportunities it gave you to try different things. They were kind of like movie set pieces, some of them in a way, you know, like action game or action movie set pieces, you know, each new level gave you something. It was a kind of a nice bit of candy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It still delivers in that department, I think. I mean, for me, the biggest frustration with Splinter Cells, and it sort of comes and goes over time, and they've worked a great deal to mitigate it, but it's always with AI in any detection based game. You're going to want to dispute the legitimacy of whether or not you were detected. So that's always an issue, you know.
Right.
You're trying to sneak up a sign. How the hell did he? Because it's all just based on, you know, logarithms and all these other, you know, on-off switches and, you know, unlike, you know, perception. Because you can't model it. So it just goes with the territory. But
it always bothered me, but made me very happy that a guy could walk like 1 inch away from me, but couldn't see me just because I happened to be in the black.
Right.
You know, like there's just no way. I mean, I was great for the gameplay,
right?
That I was able to get away with it.
Yeah, that's just the danger of making that kind of game. You can't, the AI does not exist to do the equivalent of what we're asking or to replicate human perception to
yeah, Deus Ex that degree drove of me fineness. Crazy that way. The one that really drove me crazy, though, was Thief, at least the first one. I heard that they fixed it a little better after that, but in the first Thief, it drove me crazy that there would be an NPC there standing under the lights, and, you know, if he saw you, you'd be busted, and you'd have to basically restart the level. But if you took out your bow and arrow and shot the lights out,
yeah,
then he wouldn't see you.
That's
but
one like, thing.
But the guy's just standing there while you're shooting at the lights all around him. Like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be, like, that's not necessarily realistic. It's just kind of like, you know, a gameplay meme they use.
It, that was a suspension of disbelief I couldn't buy.
You couldn't do
that,
it.
That, like, wrecked the game for
couldn't
me.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Is there a co-op mode in Splinter Cell?
Well, that's the other, that's the big thing that sucks about this game is that the multiplayer is completely broken.
Awesome.
Right now.
Broken.
But before you get to that, you're talking about competitive multiplayer, but Chaos Theory, which did offer four cooperative maps, it has none of that at all.
See, that was what I enjoyed.
Cooperative maps?
Those were awesome.
That's what I enjoyed most about Chaos Theory was the co-op mode.
Mm-hmm. And they just didn't provide that this time?
There's co-op stuff.
Really?
I mean, they're not like, they're not...
Well, where you're playing, like... Because they're iterations of the competitive mode, though, where you're playing against, like, bots, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm talking about Chaos Theory's co-op mode. They were basically, if you took a mini-narrative and you crafted it in the same way you would the single-player campaign, and the two of you work together, you know, and you go through a map that's not, you know, like, one area where you can go back and forth between it to do things, but where you more or less progress along a route.
Right, and it was different from the one in the single-player because it was... obviously specifically crafted for two people to go through.
Yeah, and they incorporate a number of moves that, you know, you're able to help one another. I mean, those are in the competitive version in this, too. The long answer there is that this is from Shanghai. And the reason that Ubisoft's able to get these Splinter Cell games out with the speed that they do is because they have two development teams leapfrogging on them. And it was another development team that did the that all the co-op stuff, and where it is that that's something that they're emphasizing again for the next one.
Right? I see.
Whereas...
I got to question the way that they're doing that so fast. I mean, it's like you said about it being like they're Madden. You know, I mean, I felt that way about Tomb Raider back in the day when Tomb Raider went from being cool to being like, oh, geez, again. Like, don't you think that a franchise like Splinter Cell would just have more cachet if they were just a little less eager to shove them in our face all the time?
I mean, that's the gamble.
Like, it'd be more
taking,
of an event.
Right. It's paying. It has to be paying. I mean... it has to have been paying well for them, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it, just in pure business matters.
Right.
And then the other gamble, enough people are willing to buy, or if the new people are coming on every year.
So it's keeping the cash flow going.
Right.
Right. But the other gamble is like if, you know, you got four out in 4 years, or the other option is, you know, two out in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And people may be still losing interest in the four-year period, so you might as well get four of them crammed in there.
I guess. It just seems like, don't you think, like, if there's another one now... where it's going to get, there's going to be a diminishing return.
Clearly, there's no level of hype, you know, like when they announced Halo 3 or when Halo 2 was announced or when Half-Life 2 was announced or Doom 3, any of these big sequels that had, you know, 4-5 year gaps between them, you know, three in the case of what was it, Halo 2. You let people build up the anticipation, the excitement. You let the last game become a legend in their own minds. And then when the next one's announced, they're like, oh, God, here comes the second coming.
Right.
You know, as opposed to now, this is like the paper on your door every morning with this one, and it's cool, and you like reading it. You know what I mean?
But it's not Splinter Cell again.
Did Splinter Cell.
Yeah, it's just not the big, you know, it's not the, what's his name, Ed McMahon or whatever coming to your door. He doesn't even bring it, but one of those old-ass dudes brings a check to my door for Publisher's Clearinghouse.
But did the original Splinter Cell have...
Some old dude brings me money.
Did the original Splinter Cell have, like, that cachet to support that? Because, like, I was never really on the Splinter Cell
train. Yeah, did the first,
like,
one?
Was it a Halo?
I love the first one. The first Splinter Cell, to me, was the first Clancy game that I was actually ever able to get behind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I don't like the squad-based stuff. It's, like, too complicated for my brain, like adventure games. But the and everything else. But I could get behind the one-man stealth thing. So... but I can't remember if the first one had that kind of hype. Did it? I don't remember now.
It did.
It does now.
It was incredible. I mean, the light work that they were doing with it was just incredible at the time. And as, you know, after Metal Gear Solid had basically come out and reinvented that genre, you know, excluding on the PC side where you have Thief and stuff, and sort of brought the attention back to that. And then here was something in that category that was different, that was, you know, grounded in reality and just looked remarkable. Mm-hmm. And at the time, all the things we take for granted now, night vision goggles, thermal goggles.
That's right.
Those were all cool. You're like, wow, look at all these ways to see it. And these are the exact same things that now when someone tries to tell you, hey, Rainbow Six Vegas, we got thermal goggles. I mean, it's like big whoop. It's like saying that you've got like, you know, a trigger on your gun or something. You're so used to it.
Yeah.
And while they are, I have a quick aside on those things. In some cases, they can really be great. You know, I'm playing some of Rainbow Six Vegas single player now. I'm getting around to that. And there are times where definitely you create the conditions yourself in which you're going to end up using those. That would be the equivalent of if you were the one who shot out the lights and then switched to your goggles, or if you threw a smoke or a tear gas grenade and switched to thermal so you could continue to fight. Mm-hmm. But what sucks is so many games forced you to use those modes. It's like you get here and all of a sudden, so what it's expecting you to do is switch to your night vision because it's dark out now.
Yeah.
But you just end up, it's just the same old thing, except it just means compromised enemy AI, and it means looking at everything through a pea soup filter for the for the next hour or something.
Well, and straining your eyes, looking at monochrome. Like some of your complaints of Gears of War, like you get to the place where there's the turret, and then you have
and
to
you just
use it.
Know, yeah. I mean, at that point, yeah, because I mean, it's because it's a decision forced on you, and then but it's got the extra like aesthetic bug in that it's just ugly looking. You don't want to look through those filters very long at anything.
Right.
You know, you want to minimize it. I mean, I'm sure people that are wearing NVGs, you know, on night missions, by the end of the night, they can't wait to take the damn things off, you know, and like turn on a light in a room, you know.
Right. Yeah.
That's so much Splinter Cell talk.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure like the Ubisoft, if the Ubisoft people are listening to this, like, why are they banging on our games all the time? They're like banging their heads against the wall. And I think this is actually a franchise really that we all like. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty undeniable that the Splinter Cell games are awesome for the most part. I guess I'm just like bringing up this, like, should they slow it down a little? Kind of. And I don't think there's a yes or no on that. I think that's a tough question to know. What is the sweet spot between, well, you know, this building up the hype, not wanting people to forget you, needing to bring money into your company, which is a valid thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I propose we talk about Left Behind.
I guess I just don't want to see another Splinter Cell before summer. That's what I'm saying. Because I need to catch up on the rest.
Well, and then in the off seasons, being the year, you know, the 11 months that you don't have a Splinter Cell game, you get to play it on your portable, on your cell phone, your DS, your PSP, your, you know, I mean, all these. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Left Behind and Firefly.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. But as long as you're here, let me tell you about EGM Live, the weekly podcast from the editors of Electronic Gaming Monthly, along with the wonderful sounds of... EGM Live comes action-packed with special guests, late-breaking news, fanboy-baiting commentary, behind-the-scenes tales of office tomfoolery, and trivia contests with fantabulous prizes. Download it now at egmlive.oneup.com or subscribe to it through iTunes.
EGM Live is part of the 1UP Radio Network, taped in the Ziff Davis offices in San Francisco. It is not actually live, and contest prizes are not guaranteed to be fantabulous.
Want more Extreme Tech? Well, now you can join the crew of expert analysts for our weekly podcast. They'll give you the lowdown on the latest technology news, product reviews, and let you know what's coming up. Just go to ExtremeTech.com to subscribe.
And we're back! Sorry.
We need to spice it up, man.
Yeah, we're a little low
we're
key
down here today.
Is it because of Darren not being here?
No, I don't think so. I think it's because we're tired.
It's the morning. Nobody has gas.
And we need something like Left Behind to get things going.
All right, so we're going to talk about Left Behind. Should we remind the listening audience what Left Behind is before we talk about it and talk about why we're talking about it?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay. Left Behind is the RTS that came out fairly recently, right? I mean, we've been looking at it for a while, but I think it just hit the store shelves.
I think it came out within the last month or so.
It is an RTS that is a explicitly religious game. Explicitly, I don't want to say, I think saying pro-Christianity would probably bother some Christians.
And of course, we've had this discussion before.
We
skip through that, but basically because there's no... there's no one single monolithic version of Christianity or what constitutes Christianity. And once you start presenting something and saying that, you know, this represents Christianity, then you're into the trouble of the other people saying, well, no, it doesn't.
You're right. We have talked
about... I mean, that's the whole thing.
This is a Christian RTS. It's not being sold I guess it is being sold in some retail stores, which is one of the things we want to talk about. But it's being sold in other ways, too. This company had actually contacted us to review the game like they did all the other gaming media, and we actually chose not to review it. And reviews editor Ryan Scott, you want to explain why?
There's a whole other discussion.
Am I getting too off topic?
I don't know.
For you?
That seems like a. But let's hit it.
Is that too off topic?
Why didn't you review it?
Let's just do
Ryan.
It quickly, and then we'll get on to the fun stuff.
We basically said no, we don't want to review it because just the controversy that goes along with it. And no matter how we presented it, I mean, somebody was going to take offense, I'm sure.
To me, it was more like a boutique game. It's not like we know our readers aren't.
Was that
wishy washy
though to not review it? I mean, I this is like news to me. I wasn't.
Oh, you didn't know?
No, I mean, I'm on the front of the book side, so the review stuff sometimes is news to me. But it just seems kind of, you know, I mean, like clearly you're afraid of what? You're afraid of offending Christians. You're afraid of them, what, arguing that your review is inaccurate because you had some kind of bias against the subject matter. I mean, what are the, I mean, clearly there are a lot of ways things go wrong, but if you went about it,
I think
the right way, couldn't you guard yourself against any of that kind of criticism?
I guess you could. I guess, I mean, I personally just felt like our readers, who's going to really want to play this game?
Right.
You know, it's like the way we decided not to review hunting games.
What about, but do we know? What if it is an incredible RTS? I mean, we could look at other sites and they're telling us maybe not so much, but what if it, say, for example, StarCraft, when it came out, had more or less these sorts of themes, or they're Hindu themes, or
so
some
what
other
if this
sort
is
of
the best RTS
charged
since StarCraft, and we just don't know because we're biased.
I'm putting that hypothetical
games
out there.
You could be right
because you're afraid of being in. If you know,
what about that Ryan Scott reviews editor? What if we're missing the boat on the best RTS of 2006?
Well, it sucks to be us.
Great answer. You're fired.
Well, I mean, for what you don't have to agree with whatever the. I mean, regardless of who you are, if you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, if you're a Catholic or whatever, and you just whatever, or if you're a Jehovah's Witness and your doctrine does not conform perfectly to this, I mean, you could still, you know, you go into it and regard it as a fiction. You look at it being a fiction.
I mean, this is based on a series of novels. It's not based on the Bible.
In the same way that, you don't need, say, a Muslim can read like Paradise Lost or whatever and still say, hey, this is great. Or Blake, you know, Blake's poetry is great. I don't.
Or what if I
buy into a
StarCraft.
Single bit of this, but I appreciate it for how it's working.
Okay. I mean, I might have gone into StarCraft with a really passionately pro-Zerg outlook on life.
In that case, what if it was L. Ron Hubbard's StarCraft, you know? I mean.
So maybe we screwed up. Maybe we should review it.
That's a question for you.
The difficult thing, I think the challenge there that we're avoiding, and I suspect, is not being confident that we can address the intersection of content and, you know, between the actual gameplay and the way that things are executed, and then the thematic, everything else going on that makes the game what the game is.
Right.
Big brain part here.
If the unit balance is actually awesome and the tactics are cool, does it matter that the theme of the game is that you got to kill or convert non-Christians?
And that's a big challenge because we always, I mean, and we, I'll just speak for critics at large, are very capable of going in with the Consumer Reports angle and saying, this works or this doesn't. These little Satanists that I'm fighting get stuck in buildings and don't come out when I fight them. But when you get to the point where what we don't do so well or very often, you know, at least at large, is say, well, what does this all mean? How does this all come together? What is it saying? You know, how does it, what do we think about this thing other than just the mechanics of it was fun to shoot that, or this guy AI worked well, or this environment was shady, or, you know what I mean? And that's where I think the real criticism is at. And this could have been a model game to
So maybe we should try to play it and like I can just pretend that like each different unit type is like something like from a fantasy or alien universe.
Right.
Well, you know, so like the Jews can be the Zerks, say.
But that's there, though. I mean, you shouldn't ignore that. I mean, if it is, if you are reacting to it that way, I mean, you shouldn't ignore that. I mean, that should be a point in the review, I think, you know?
Well, right.
Say, for example, if you played, you know, when the Vietnam shooter phase happened, you know, a year and a half ago, and there were like five of them at once. Some of them, I think, made some very poor decisions in terms of how they presented the people involved in that, you know, tragedy. And that has an impact on your experience of the game. In the same way, you don't go see a Gibson movie, a Mel Gibson movie, and say the cinematography is so well, the acting, you know, the performances are excellent and everything. Mm-hmm. And this is it's a good movie because of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's never that. It's always the sum of the parts, you know.
Right.
And you say, hey, this stuff actually matters. And if you do object to these things, it's definitely your right as a critic to say so. You're
right.
Just and not speaking for everyone, and no critic ever does.
Right.
I think that's
maybe why when it gets right down to it, we probably didn't review it because we were thinking like, well, if you're not a fundamentalist Christian, or not even fundamentalist, that's not right.
If you're a Christian that doesn't prescribe to Hayes and the other co-writers,
then you're going to be offended by this game, so let's not bother.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're an ultra conservative believer in any number of faiths, you might take grave offense at the contents of Doom or something, you know?
Yeah.
So let's not bother. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't just run away from things because they're controversial, you know?
We can if we're cowards.
I mean,
right.
I mean, there's so many things in
that's
all
our
games
new motto.
That someone can take
we can
at,
because
you know?
We're cowards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if we were a magazine that was reviewing movies, like, would we not review The Passion of the Christ because, you know,
because you're
Gibson
Jewish, you know,
nice yeah. analogy, yeah,
yeah. Like, what if you're a Jewish critic? You know, I can't review this movie. You know, yeah. what you right. do is you put your perspective on the table. Mm-hmm. So here is where right. my biases are because of my, you know, subject position, because mm-hmm. I'm a Jew reacting to this, you know, Christian movie mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. You know. Mm-hmm.
You don't get to play the other side, do you?
But we're not alone. Who else is running away from this? This is what we're bringing the story up. I mean, who else is running away from it in your
right.
news story?
That's right. Actually, we brought out a printout that was in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday. The headline was, Convert or Die Game Divides Christians. Some ask Walmart to drop Left Behind. So that's why this whole thing came up in the first place. So I'll read the lead here. Liberal and progressive Christian groups say a new computer game in which players must either convert or kill non-Christians is the wrong gift to give this holiday season, and that Walmart, a major video game retailer, should yank it off its shelves.
Did they ever hold a similar protest or boycott discussion over the fact that Walmart was selling the books, the novels?
Yeah, I wonder. And I also,
good point.
It makes
if
me
not,
wonder like
I mean,
how closely
how
these books.
How ridiculous is this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know Walmart sells those books. I mean,
and has made a great deal of money selling those books,
right?
But now, what is the difference now in the game, and what is the assumption on the part of these concerned consumers that a video game has got some kind of great persuasive power that a book doesn't?
Right.
You know, that a medium that's been developed over, you know, centuries and centuries.
Nobody reads
and
books.
And all the rhetoric that's come in, you know, even prior to literacy, that is somehow, you know, irrelevant in light of the great persuasive impact of gaming.
Right.
And again, too, it's like, what? Don't sell products that persuade people to think things that disagree. I mean, it doesn't even make sense on that front.
Games are easy targets.
Like, yeah, I mean, this thing says here that actually the books are incredibly popular with teens.
Uh-huh.
So the part of the story that I've read like three times now and I still don't understand is this. It says, it's describing the game, and it says, in Left Behind, set in perfectly apocalyptic New York City, the Antichrist is personified by fictional Romanian Nicolae Carpathia, Secretary General of the United Nations and a People magazine sexiest man alive. What the hell?
Well, now I gotta play this game.
How random is that? Players can choose to join the Antichrist team. Yes. Okay, I like that. But of course, they can never win on Carpathia's side. The enemy team includes fictional rock stars and folks with Muslim-sounding names, while the righteous includes gospel singers, missionaries, healers, and medics.
This is what we're getting into, because we brought the instruction manual with us so we can look at some of the units, the specific breakdown of units in a bit here.
I like this quote, too, and then we could get to that, yeah. When asked about the Arab and Muslim-sounding names, Fritschner is the president of Left Behind Games. When asked about the Arab and Muslim-sounding names, he said, the game does not endorse prejudice, but, quote, Muslims are not believers in Jesus Christ and thus can't be on Christ's side in the game. Quote, that is so obvious, he said.
But I think
so if you have a Muslim sounding name,
that guy is at least being true to his convictions. He's not being wishy-washy, because I think a great number of people that will say, I mean, they're not taking their faith seriously. You know, I mean, this is, but for a certain, for his line, for people that, that follow that line of thinking and the way that they interpret the Bible, they get from it that it says, in order to, you know, be saved, you have to believe in Jesus Christ as the Savior and all those things that you're used to hearing. And that, and then that means then if you don't, then you're one of those that's going to be left behind. So, I mean, he's just saying what, whether it's a whole bunch of hogwash or not, I mean, he, at least he's being consistent with his own belief system rather than coming out and lying in order to try to sell you something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one last thing from the article. At the end it says, Plugged In, a publication of the conservative Christian group Focus on the Family, that's a nice name, gave the game a thumbs up. The reviewer called it, quote, the kind of game that mom and dad can actually play with Junior and use it to raise some interesting questions along the way. Yeah, I wonder what some of those interesting questions are.
Yeah.
Why are the Jews going to hell? I think well, son, that's a good idea. Good question. Fritzner said that is precisely his company's ultimate goal in offering the game, to bring parents and kids together to talk about the Bible. He said most teens are playing video games, so it was natural to turn the books into one. Okay. Mm. So, Sean Elliott, you're studying the manual quite intently there.
I just think it's funny as heck. So you look at some of the breakdowns. In addition, it doesn't list the unit, the specific individual unit's name, so you can't see the Muslim-sounding stuff here. But I thought this was funny. The basically, on the Antichrist side, your units are basically trained at colleges. So, like, you know, when you're building...
Oh, so if you're an academic.
Right.
Oh,
when you're building your bases and your, you know, your to deploy your units from, if you're on the Christian side... You train them at churches and whatnot, but everything comes from all the special units and units for the Antichrist side are trained in colleges, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, you can't trust those colleges, those college-educated people.
Or supermarkets.
Supermarkets?
What? And mega markets.
Wait, supermarkets are forces for the Antichrist?
They are in this, right.
Christian shop?
And then just like some of the abilities, like the standard ability for all the Antichrist is swear. Like, so instead of, like, you know, MP5 and whatever, you know, it's like they swear. So, and everyone has got that ability. So it's like, and then that's opposed to the pray ability. So you just go, swear? I mean, you have a bunch of these guys like running around like, whatever, you know, and like,
take
yeah,
the
that's their
vein.
Yeah, right.
So what, that's how you fight them? Fuck you, Christian guy.
Yeah,
that's your attack.
That's how you fight them. And then so some of, let's look at some of the other... The specifics of these are funny.
Can you win if you're on
instead
the Antichrist
of like
side,
the healers? The healers are like doctors that are trained at, you know, hospitals and clinics and stuff, as opposed to no, the dark heroes are, as opposed to faith based centers or whatever.
Okay.
So again, I mean, it's like what? I mean, go to the hospital if you want Satan to cure you. You know, I mean, like, so I mean, and then it gets even more ridiculous. I mean, you've got the equivalent of like. Let's see. You know, let's just read some stuff here. Where was I? I'm trying to mark some pages. Okay, you got a level one pretender. He's a classic street performer with a little global community propaganda thrown in for effect. The pretender plays off his ability to entertain, but he's really more like a behavior monitor. He's there to remind everyone that the global community has eyes and ears absolutely everywhere. So keep this in mind. The next time you see the dude spray painted in silver paint and they got the little like whistle in his mouth doing a robot, he's really part of the Illuminati checking up on what you're doing down in the wharf.
Wow. Goddamn right.
Bush.
like the fire juggler. That's like the devil's own third eye. Checking you out.
Actually makes sense.
Then the activist, he's a level two.
The activist.
He's the proverbial wolf in sheep's clothing, and he's certainly not all that he seems.
Aren't there like Christian activists too?
His main role is definitely not peaceful. The activist is capable of actually sabotaging buildings that the global community designates as undesirable. So the activist is really what they're about is getting like whatever, like buildings condemned that the global community or Illuminati or whatever doesn't like. I mean, I've at least heard the terms of like getting rid of the, I mean, you know, in like the Art Bell circles where the black helicopters and all that, they're basically trying to depopulate the country so that they can turn large areas of rural America into concentration camps. And at least they go somewhere with that. But here, they just wanted the buildings down.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, I don't like that safe.
So is that, that's a unit, the activist?
That's a unit.
So
others
is that
are,
like my stealth, is that like my saboteur?
Yeah, that is sabotage. Okay. Yeah, and then you've got musicians. So level one is
musician.
Just like basically a roadie, and they can swear and sing. Then you get to a band member and recording artist who can actually swear and play.
Oh, that's dangerous.
And then like the guru, the level three musician of the devil is the rock star or pop star. Uh-huh. So the problem with these popular rock stars, according to the manual, is that they've found their 15 minutes of fame delivered courtesy of the Antichrist himself. Capable of connecting with and deceiving a huge audience, the rock star pop star is a force to be reckoned with, usually surrounded by band members. So it's like a mob. Like, this is a mob you run into.
Evil rock musicians.
All those nearby stop and listen to the deceitful lyrics. But this is kind of too much fun to me. I'm going to have to play this.
I know. You're reading this and I'm thinking, I don't think I've ever played anything like this.
Yeah. And then you got a cult leader. That's pretty good.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's
but anyway, yeah, I just had to point out, it just seems funny that like we got a game that's telling us that college is where you raise the devils. That's
so we've learned from this that education is bad,
right?
Music is bad.
That scientific medical training possibly bad. I'm not
bad.
Sure if it's a.
But yeah. Video games are good.
Those are good lessons to teach junior.
Right.
You're right, Mom. I'm not going to college.
So yeah, I think that's about that on that, but.
Yeah, I think we should review it.
Okay.
I mean, clearly you just need, the reviewer's got to be confident in being able to differentiate and explain his or her perspective and, you know, what's at stake here and how much it's going to matter. Because it's going to matter differently to everyone. To me, I think it's pretty funny that there's like that activists in college or whatever are like all the Antichrist in here. But I mean, you could very well be upset about that too. You could be like, well, this is...
What I want to see is I want to see the cutscene if you play as the Antichrist and you win. Like, what happens? There's like a big rock concert.
You can't win, right? Is that
you can't win?
Is that what that article said?
Well, that sucks.
There's a whole other gameplay thing. It's just like, why would I pick the team that can't win?
Yeah, that's a bad gameplay mechanic. You beat the last
it's because you're deceived.
You lose!
They should deceive you into thinking.
You're still going to hell.
They deceive you into thinking that you can win, but it's not revealed that you can't until it's too late.
Well, we just spoiled it. Don't play the Antichrist.
That's the twist. So we've got some other news about controversy, games being controversial, or game content.
Are you reading the manual now? Oh, you should also note that Big Huge Games, the makers of Left Behind have licensed the Rise of Legends people to do their next engine.
Oh my goodness.
Or they licensed the Rise of Legends engine itself or something.
Oh, okay. So, they license the people.
They license the people. I can talk.
They license God.
So, yeah, I wonder where the programmers went to school that made Left Behind.
Not college.
Yeah. Okay, so you want to move on to some news, some other news stories?
Yeah, let's move on.
So we get that. One thing that's pretty interesting in light of, you know, our discussions here about how we're going to crack down, and this is like a consumer-based initiative, right, to get Walmart to stop selling this.
Right.
You know, on the other side of the world, in China, BBC reports that, you know, as we know, constantly monitoring, you know, what's permissible in game content, not. But recently, I'll just read from the BBC World Report. So China is enforcing more monitoring of online games after some were found to contain banned religious or political material. Let's see. China has more than 23 million online gamers, generating revenues of more than $850 million a year. Distributors must now obtain approval before releasing new games. Companies must also submit monthly monitoring reports confirming developers have not added forbidden content. Hmm. So the latest round of enforcement was prompted by a rash of problems with imported online games, some of which contain sensitive religious material or refer to territorial disputes. So this is interesting in that... I mean, I kind of wonder exactly what the deal is here. I mean, are we talking about the game content itself as it was shipped? Contains, you know, religious references and territorial disputes. Territorial disputes makes me think some of these games are from China. I mean, are from Japan, rather.
Yeah, that's a weird...
Rather than United
what
States.
Kind
the
of,
religious
what
stuff
kind of online game talks about territorial disputes?
I mean, Chinese games do. Like, they've got the big Chinese naval MMO and is very much about territorial disputes. And then also just the history of, you know, Japanese invasion of Manchuria and whatnot. So there's got to be something there. But I think this is interesting because... It also applies, I mean, to stuff that's added after the fact. And when you're dealing with MMOs, which is where all the gaming is really occurring there, that's where the revenue is generated. I mean, if you're generating revenue on software in China, it's basically because you're paying a subscription fee.
Also, let's pause for one moment to note that number. 23 million people playing online games?
Right.
Holy
crap. Think
about
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's astronomical in terms of, you know, in terms of how many people are playing over here.
That's a lot of people not doing anything productive with their lives.
Right. So
how many people did it take to make the Great Wall?
I think back on track, I think it's interesting because you're going to have to, in MMOs then, is what I'm pointing out, is that so much of the content is player generated. Mm-hmm. And it's like this big, it's almost like another version of the hot coffee thing here, where it's like you decide, but there the question is, it doesn't matter who made it there. They can just say that. It's just that it exists and we're going to stop it. But so does it mean that you've got, you know, party members playing MMOs, just patrolling around, basically Big Brother inside of a game, just to make sure that everything that's going on is
that's weird.
Is a government approved, you know?
That exists in this country, but I guess it's not government monitored.
No.
But you know, each company is doing its own
Blizzard
monitoring
monitor.
For whatever sexual content or political comment or you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happening here.
Yeah, so that happens
the
here.
The government doing it is a whole other thing.
It is a whole other thing. Yeah.
Eey.
And the moral is, thank God we live in America, where we have our freedoms. Man, them Chinese are backwards.
So another piece of news, and this is reported by the Washington Post, and I got it from gamasutra.com, great website. And it has to do with cracking down on word of mouth and viral marketing, especially as it pertains to video games. So...
what's the name of that website if our listeners have not seen this one?
Is it Gamma or Gamma?
No.
Actually, both. First of all, let's give credit to Gamma Sutra.
Okay, Gamma Sutra.
Which is an amazingly great site.
That's what I want to give him a shout out for. I mean, just anytime I browse around there, constantly surprised and delighted by the types of stories I find.
Yeah, some of the most intelligent gaming conversation going on all the time, as opposed to podcasts where people fart on air.
Right.
But also, this viral ad that has caused this latest round.
Okay, we'll get to that. I mean, just quick, I'll read from their news story. And it's basically that the Federal Trade Commissioner, FTC, has spoken out against word of mouth and viral marketing, indicating that companies must make it clear when actors are posing as consumers or our customers in order to promote a product. Consumer Protection Agency warning includes any kind of peer-to-peer communication, such as posts on weblogs, MySpace, or popular video sites such as YouTube. Marketing schemes are already covered under existing FTC regulation, with a new warning posted as a staff opinion, pointing out that violators could receive cease and desist orders, fines, or civil penalties. Now, we all know about some of the bigger ones, like for Halo 2, they had the alternate reality gaming promotion, which was... it was called the Haunted Apiary by some, or I Love Bees by others, which was the name of the site. But here, what's bringing it up now is that there's this All I Want for Christmas is a PSP campaign. And so clearly it's Sony, but it's being presented as some kid's blog type entry about how he, you know, wants to get himself.
It's like all street.
Right.
Right.
Now that like was a million, to me, that's a totally different thing than I Love Bees.
Right.
Like, I Love Bees doesn't feel insidious to me the way this does.
Because I Love Bees, it's clear that it's... if you really think... the difference between... You could say, hey, there's this dude who really wants a... there's this chump who really wants a PSP. But... or is there some person who's, like, apiary is haunted and who's, like, trapped up in some kind of global conspiracy or whatever? I mean, you could believe that, but it's almost like... We're not going to protect you for your own stupidity, you know. But here, this is the kind of thing where, and even on message boards, we deal with this on our own forums, where someone comes in and they present themselves in certain circumstances as, hey, I'm just another one of you guys. I'm here to talk to you guys and chat. And then eventually they start doing certain things. They start posting about what's your favorite snack food when you game.
What's your energy drink of choice?
Right. And this kind of thing. Or, hey,
God, I love Mountain Dew.
There's this great offer here and there. And it turns out they're basically paid promoters of a product, but they're under the guise of, you know.
Lance.
Mm-hmm. And in the same way, we kick them off as soon as we find out what's up, or make a good deal of fun of them.
Yeah, we just say, yeah, actually Mountain Dew tastes like urine, fucker.
Yeah.
And you're banned.
But basically, I mean, I'm definitely for that, at least the disclosure part of it, you know.
Right.
If you're going to do this, you have to tell someone, because, I mean, do you really want a world where every time someone talks to you, you're suspicious that they're trying to sell you something? You know, I mean, like...
I already am.
Like, guys, you're walking down the street and some, like, a cute girl comes up and just says, hey, how you doing? I want to talk, you know, and then, like, just some elaborate thing. But it's like, do you really want to think that only time anyone wants to talk to me is because they want me to go buy some piece of crap, you know.
I mean, they already kind of have that, like...
Company should, like, enlist, like, every homeless person in SF to just be a viral marketer.
Yeah.
Like, shout at you, get out of PSP!
There actually is. Did you see advertising? So there's this local guy here. His name is Frank Chu. I don't know what his...
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, his nickname is, like, 12 Galaxies.
Oh, the 12 Galaxies.
And he wears a suit, basically, and he has this sign with just all sorts of... You know, random
nonsense.
Like,
nonsense Galactic put on it.
12
Emperor,
galaxies. Yeah. The Zygotronic Galactatron enters on this and that.
Yeah,
and just carries the sign around everywhere.
He's become a legend in the area to the point that, like, on Halloween, you'll see people dressing up as him.
Right,
and he just appears in the most random places. So, like, it'll be a news report on some like nudist get together or something, and you just see him walking by. The people are blurred out, you know, their parts, and then he walks by in a suit holding his sign. He just ends up anywhere.
Yep,
and. But recently, he's got advertising on the back of his sign.
Right, he's been sponsored now.
Yeah, he's got sponsored.
This crazy man brought to you by Adidas. That's kind of genius.
Yeah.
But yeah, this PSP thing is particularly...
No, it's actually bad. It's Rasputin Music, which is almost like fitting, you know, because their logo is Rasputin.
You're right.
Wild-eyed looking
That's
nut
funny.
Job selling music, and they've got
perfect
you know, Frank roaming around. Another thing about that guy,
billboard,
because he's... pure PC gaming is that he just stand on the corner like, rah, 12 galaxies, Zygotronic, or whatever.
There's something about this PSP thing that really, it struck a nerve in the online community, and I think for good reason. Mm. You know, it really just feels like wrong. I mean,
we got our, he was gross. Our version of Lonely Girl.
Right. It is very much like the Lonely Girl.
He cared about this guy.
There's like a comment section too, and like, I don't know, it just was... It's really gross.
I mean, like, when I first saw it, it was already, you know, exposed as a fraud. So I wasn't like, I was going to this guy's blog anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, who was? Who went to this guy's blog and was like, yeah, man, I want one too.
Yeah. What a cool rap.
Right.
Well, that made me want
it's
one.
It's like, while the internet, you know, does create these opportunities for this sort of thing, it also is... created a vast community of skeptics and watchdogs.
Oh,
So I mean, within minutes of this, you know, some of the bigger sites, you know, some of the bigger gaming forums and blogs and stuff are immediately like calling this guy out.
Right.
Yeah. So that's like, good too. But I think it's, you know,
so we shouldn't do our own for Games for Windows Magazine. Some YouTube video with some guy rapping about how cool we are.
Yeah. About how everyone.
I gotta get a subscription to Games for Windows Magazine. You feel me?
Yeah.
I'm glad they got exposed.
Yeah. Me too. I'm glad they're cracking down on that sort of thing.
Of course, it was like yet another in an ongoing series of bad days for Sony. But what are you going to do?
It's just a parade.
And then they also had the thing with the like the fake ass graffiti.
Yeah,
they had the dudes with like the guidebook in one hand and the crayon in the other.
They got to just stop with the
what
fake
you write rap. PSP, son.
Yeah.
Guys tagging PSP.
Fake hip is a bad thing.
Yeah. Very.
Do we got anything else? How long have we been yapping here?
Almost an hour.
An hour? Wow.
Yeah.
And that's without
approaching
Darren.
An hour. Yeah.
Nice and rambling.
Do we have it? Was anything else on our list there? Oh, Firefly.
Talk
about Firefly. Do we have anything to say about that? There was an announcement that what's the story behind this? I could do it.
That's because you played all those adventure games. Now you got Alzheimer's.
See, I got nothing.
I just got to attach a comb to a jar of honey and put a string in it.
There's going to be a Firefly MMO.
That's all we really know, too.
Right.
And it caused like a lot of people in the online community to kind of go, wow, Firefly MMO, because it's such like, you know. It's geek cred.
Very much geek cred. It has geek cred with me.
Yeah, me too.
I come down as a full-on Firefly lover.
Blah, blah, blah,
but I think I'm with you.
Serenity 2, the movie.
Yeah, they're both great. But I think I'm with you where I'm just like, why is this an exciting announcement?
Yeah, it was weird because when that announcement went out, you could go to Gaming Age, you could go to any forum, and people are like, oh my God, yes!
Right.
Firefly MMO!
And they're the same people
I'm so there.
Who on the very same forum would be like, you know, Ghost Rider movie announced, and they're just like, oh, look at this, get a load of this shit, you know?
Right.
Shit, I'm making it worse. Or, you know, Preacher is a great comic book series by Vertigo, and they just announced that someone's making, you know, it's completely just ass director is going to make a TV series of it. And it's only going to, not even a series.
And everyone, of course, is cynical about that.
An hour long.
They're just like, oh, why Preacher movie?
Yeah, but then they're like, Firefly. Oh, that's going to make a great game. Right, all that characterization and, you know,
that's the thing.
Joss Whedon's writing will be.
That's the thing. Firefly was, to me, was all about Joss Whedon's writing. like it was his writing was so awesome and those characters were so well developed. That's why I like that show so much. But in an MMO, what are you going to do?
Like, I mean, the setting is kind of interesting. It's like Western sci-fi, which is okay. That's not the same as, you know,
I say this
Anarchy
goes,
Online,
but,
I guess.
But the great thing about Firefly was like you were laughing every other line.
Right.
And then it would be some great action sequence. But in this, we're all just going to be walking around like in cowboy outfits in space. Like, how's that good?
It's like Vivendi's
Chinese
making
words every now and then.
Yeah, yeah, cursing in Chinese.
Vivendi's making a new Battlestar game based on the new series. It's like the same thing, you know. At first, it's some part of you, you're like, oh yeah, Battlestar, I like Battlestar. But then you're like, wait a minute, what makes it what it is? And can that be, you know, reproduced or spun in some, you know, productive way? In this format,
yeah,
I will say the only thing that's kind of exciting about that universe is
Firefly?
Like if you take like Star Wars, the problem with Star Wars is everyone wants to be a freaking Jedi,
right?
And Firefly doesn't really have that.
Okay,
there is no like obvious uber superstar class that everyone's going to want to gravitate towards. Like everyone in that show, you can kind of see them falling into a class world. They're like, oh, you do have a doctor, you do have the priest, you do have the.
But then,
you know,
how
the
isn't this
hunter.
Just some generic space MMO then?
Right, I mean, it's kind of what the players are going to put into it, I guess, but I don't.
And we know what players put into it.
Exactly.
Jack shit. It's the same thing in every MMO.
Right.
The role players.
I want to level up. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Right.
No one's going to get into the.
And the, I mean, the level of role playing will amount to like the level of role playing that was in WoW initially, which is now completely gone, where people like who would play trolls would every once in a while say, "Hey, Mon," because they have Jamaican accents.
Right.
That was it. Looking for group Mon.
That's immersion.
Yeah,
right,
or
there.
Dwarf
it
characters
is.
Who say I instead of yes.
Looking
which
for
always
group.
Drives me crazy. Just say yes. You're not
I.
a frickin' dwarf.
Hail.
In real life. Hail.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're down on the Firefly MMO.
We're down on
maybe
a lot of
be
stuff.
Great. I mean, it's
but
still,
we are down on
we're
a lot.
We're always down.
We're haters.
We hate everything.
We take the bus, the
we're
hater
not haters
bus
like
around
one
town.
Of yours. Those guys hate everything.
Point at things and hate.
We liked some stuff. I went out of our way to say we actually liked Splinter Cell.
Yeah, and I like the fact that I trained in my forces in the college and left behind.
Uh-huh.
I like that, too.
We're lovers, not haters. Most of all, we love you, dear listener. That was
rotten.
Edit that out.
Yeah, can we do that?
It stinks in here now after that line.
That smelled like one of those Nightline to Catch a Predator things.
Okay, we're going to wrap this up.
Dateline or whatever it is, Nightline.
Okay, thanks for listening. We will be back eventually. Are we back next week? Next week is...
Yes.
Yeah,
we are so
why
back.
Are you looking so hateful
next
right?
week should be our last podcast of...
Ever?
Of 2006,
of 2006, right?
What day are we doing that on?
But let's
Monday.
Not even say.
We're discussing it.
We got to do it Monday.
Because I'm not here Monday.
Between
so
Monday and Friday.
We are doing another podcast next week, sometime next week. And you will get to hear it eventually. That's as much as
That's
we're saying
the
right now. We podcast when we podcast. See you next week. Goodbye.